Good morning. How many of you love the weather we're having right now? Both of us are really glad. Shouldn't have said that. And now I've got to figure out how to get out of that hole. Anyway, I'm Rusty. I'm pastor here at New Hope. And whether you're on campus or online, we're really glad you're with us. I need to do a confession. I debated on this. Several months ago, Stacy and David pitched this idea of doing this series. Came up with the title "Love Speaks." It's based a lot of it's based on work that Gary Chapman did in his book "The Five Love Languages." When they mentioned it to me in the meeting, I smiled, and inside I'm going, "Arg!" I just didn't want to do it. I had this mental picture that was like, "Oh no, it's going to be this touchy-feely thing," and then they said, "You take a love quiz," and I'm like, "Oh, just, you know, just shoot me now." Oh, I didn't say that, but it all going on in my thought bubble, and I don't know. I've changed my mind. I'm really glad we're doing it. I did start off a little bit reluctant, and especially the quiz thing. I thought, this is going to be so bad. I took the quiz, and it wasn't that bad. That's not a ringing endorsement, I know, but then the thing is, it's not about us doing it. If you haven't taken it, that's really okay, but what's important is the people around us doing it, because it's going to help us know how to care about them. So anyway, I really like this. I think it's really helping me learn some things. And the idea here is that those of us that are followers of Jesus, we have been given an assignment by our Lord and Savior that we're to love people around us, all the people around us. That's a big ask. Some of you are really hard to love. It's easy. We talk about love all the time. It's a great word, you know, and especially if you're doing well, you know, I love the world, I love everybody, and you know, and that's kind of worthless. Love is not an emotion. It's not something that's just easy to do. It's a difficult choice to make, and we don't see it operating very well around us. We see sometimes we do see it, but most of us, we don't mind being loved, but don't ask me to love anybody that I don't want to. So there's a struggle with it. Those of us, again, that know Jesus, our responsibility is not to grab love, but to give it. Our job is to go around and everyone that we can to show God's love through us for them. You know, and when we hear that, most of us want to channel our inner, he's not a great theologian, but we want to channel our inner meatloaf. I'd do anything for love, but I won't do that. You know, I'm not going to love that person. Oh, great. You know, give me some easy people. But don't give me these ones that are hard, and don't make me have to think about it. If people don't like the way I express love, tough. So, you know, there's a lot of battles that we fight in this, and at the end of the day, those of us that are followers of Jesus, we can love because we've been really, really well loved. Even if no one ever comes through for us again, because Jesus has, we have a foundation that we know how to love, and we know what it's like to be loved when you're unlovable. We know what it's like when you need to really be forgiven. Where others might give you guilt and shame and all this, Jesus gave us grace. He gave us mercy, he gave us kindness, he gave us a new start. We know we do need to love, and we know how to. It's a choice of whether we're going to or not. I could do this, and I will not, but I could have said, why don't you grab a card and a seat back in front of you and write down the name of two people you just don't like. I mean, you really don't like them at all. You don't want to have anything to do with them. You don't love them. You don't care about them. And people that are maybe part of the church. People you know that claim to be followers of Jesus, but man, they're just miserably difficult people. I'm not going to ask you to do that because you just did. You did it in your head. We all have people like this in our mind. Listen to what the Bible tells us. It says, we love each other because he loved us first. If someone says, I love God, but hates a fellow believer, that person is a liar. Let me read that one again. If someone says, I love God, but hates a fellow believer, that person is a liar. For if we don't love people we can see, how can we love God whom we cannot see? And he has given us this command, those who love God must also love their fellow believers. It starts inside Jesus' church, our church, all iterations of the church. And there's a world watching to see if we do it well. Jesus gave this command. He said, I want you to love each other. The way I've loved you, I want you to love each other. And he said, by this, the world will know if you're my disciples or not. Not by your bumper stickers, your big proclamations, your protests and all that. They're going to know that you love me by the way you love each other. And to be honest, some of us are really hard to love. But that doesn't give an excuse for us to not to learn how. Love is a deliberate choice, and it's a choice that says, I'm going to put what you need above what I want. I'm going to care about you, and I'm going to step into your life and help you every way I can. It's not based on feelings. It's not based on mutuality or anything like that. It's just that this is the assignment God's given me. I need to love you. And the hard to love are the ones we learn the most from. The ones that are really difficult, the ones that don't give us anything back that's good, because it helps us understand more about how God has loved us, and it's a reminder that we are really, really fortunate. So these five love languages that Gary Chapman came up with, he came out with his book in 92. It didn't sell that many copies, but since then, 20 million have been sold, and the reason is because it has struck something in people, whether it's home or work, school, neighborhood, where they realize that we're all wired somewhat differently. And he's come up with these five kind of generalized ways that we receive and give love. You know, there's words of affirmation or encouragement. There are acts of service. There's quality time. That's what we're looking at today. There are gifts. There's a physical touch. I mean, there are different ways that we express and receive it, and it's to our benefit to understand it and to look at it and to try to evaluate. So what am I going to do? This week, we're looking at this idea of quality time. And for some of us, that resonates, oh, I love quality time. And for others of us, it's like, oh, no, can't we skip that one? And you can tell someone's primary way they express love and all about how they respond to that. For some people, quality time means completely undistracted time where you're sitting around and you're talking about stuff. For other people, it's your undistracted time with someone and you're working maybe on a project or something else together. You're with each other, but you're not necessarily communicating. You're just together. There are no distractions in it. For others, it could be just hanging out, doing something fun, but it builds a connection. You can go to a sports game with someone and have quality time because you're having a shared experience. Like all of the five love languages, there are two basic ways to discover what speaks love to someone around you. They're real simple. You just watch them and ask. I know this is really tricky, but you don't have to spend a lot of time with people to find out what really their prime. And generally, the way someone treats you is it's evidence of what their primary love language is. Becky's primary one is words of affirmation. Lots of words of affirmation. Lots of words. She married someone. Nah, that's low on the list. I have to learn some of that. So I'm just saying, you can watch, you can ask, and especially with this thing of quality time, I want to mention this, is that the last 28 months have been really, really tough for people that this is their primary kind of go-to. For introverts, COVID was not good, but a lot of them kind of enjoyed, I get this, I get to justify spending a lot of time by myself. For other people, it's been extremely hard. They're distanced. I mean, Zoom, conferencing, and live streaming and all that, it's okay, but it doesn't take the place of being with people in person. And they're finding this out in businesses. We're going to see this over the next few years, that the virtual world has benefits, but it doesn't replace actually being in the presence of other people. The virtual world, you can schedule all kind of great things. But in the real world, there are a lot of unscheduled things that can happen when we're with each other that you couldn't have planned it, and it goes into that quality time thing. Nursing homes have been especially devastated by this. My mom's in a memory care facility in South Carolina near my sister. Mom's got severe Alzheimer's, and so part of the advantage of Alzheimer's, she doesn't know all that's going on, but there's created even more of a distance, though, in having eye contact and all that with people, and having that close thing. We weren't allowed to go. We could look at her through a window. Mom's trying to get out that door. She doesn't understand why we're only looking through a window. When we get in, we're having to wear masks. She doesn't know who I am. She knows I'm a good person. We like each other. She recognizes that. She doesn't know my name. But when I'm wearing a mask, it's even harder for her. This quality time thing, there are some people that have really missed out on it. And you and I have a chance to come back and build it into their lives. So anyway, I wanted to mention that. But I want to tell a story. This is a story that happened to Jesus that illustrates some of this idea of the love languages, how it plays out, and kind of what happens to us when we respond well or when we don't. I love the stories we have in the Bible of the real events that happened with Jesus, because if you spend a little bit of time with them, you learn a ton. In this case, Jesus and his disciples, they're on the way to Jerusalem. Jesus has become very popular, but also very polarizing. There's groups that want him taken out, but they're afraid to do it because the public outcry would be huge. So they're working on it, and eventually they're going to come up with a plan that they think takes care of Jesus, but he surprises them. Anyway, he and his disciples on the way to Jerusalem, and there's a family that they know well. It's two sisters and a brother, Martha, Mary, and their brother Lazarus. Lazarus isn't in this story, but we do see him play prominently other times in the Bible. Martha and Mary hear that Jesus is going to be coming, and they invite him and his disciples to come have dinner with them, probably dinner and spend the night on their way to Jerusalem. And so this is the story. It says, as Jesus and the disciples continued on the way to Jerusalem, they came to a certain village where a woman named Martha welcomed them into her home. Her sister Mary sat at the Lord's feet, listening to what he taught. But Martha was distracted by the big dinner she was preparing. She came to Jesus and said, Lord, doesn't it seem unfair to you that my sister just sits here while I do all the work? Tell her to come here and help me. But the Lord said to her, my dear Martha, you are worried and upset over all these details. There's only one thing worth being concerned about. Mary has discovered it, and it will not be taken away from her. Now, you can read that. It takes, I don't know, that took me about 38 seconds to read that. But there's a whole lot in this story. Think about it. Martha and Mary are going to have Jesus and his disciples come have a meal with them. It's at least 13 guys. They spend their day walking. That's how they travel. They didn't have a Winnebago, and they didn't have a little minivan. So they probably are hungry. It's the end of the day. They're on their way to Jerusalem. They're probably going to have a lot of preparations, not only for the meal, but where they're going to spend the night. And in that town where they lived, everybody knew Jesus. Everybody was going to be wondering, what's happening? How's that going? And in these meals, a lot of times, people's home would be opened up, so there'd be a lot of people that could listen in and hear what's going on. It was a community event. Martha and Mary are going to, I mean, they've got a lot of preparation to do. If just normally three of them that live in the house, so they've got to come up with all the utensils, all the stuff we've got to do to provide for the at least 13 guys, maybe some more. And we're going to have to come up with the food. I mean, they got to figure out the shopping on all this kind of stuff, and they didn't have a Costco then. They didn't have some place where they didn't go to the neighbor's freezer to find stuff. They had to, you know, all this is going to be fresh. They got to go figure out, what are we going to get? How are we going to do it? What meal? They probably hadn't figured out, is Jesus gluten-free? I don't know. What do we do with this? I wonder what they like. We probably have a wide variety because remember, this is going to be it's going to be on display. Everyone's going to see it. So they want it to be, some of you know what it's like. You've put on a little dinner party and it ended up just becoming this huge deal. Because there are all kind of other things you think about. I'm not wired that way. You come to my house and have a dinner party, and everything I serve you is coming in the bag it came in. Becky won't do that. There are serving bowls, there are doilies, there are anyway, my guess is Martha and Mary were more like Becky. So there's a lot of work going on there, borrowing stuff from their neighbors, probably getting some people to join in and cooking because she didn't have enough room where she was. So there's a lot going on to make this thing happen. And you got to find accommodations for them. I mean, this is a big deal. Full bore hospitality, days of planning, days of preparation and kind of thinking through all the ramifications of this versus that. Martha and Mary have operated as a team. Jesus and the disciples arrive. Probably have a lot of people watching. They come in the house and, you know, Martha and Mary greet them and hug them and all this kind of stuff and get them some appetizers. Martha goes back to work. Mary takes her apron off and sits in the living room with them. And then things start to happen. In the living room, Mary's in there with the guests and they're all talking, probably laughing. There's stories being told, having a really good time reconnecting. Martha's in the kitchen. Martha's working hard. She still sees on her checklist there's a lot of things that still have to be done. She can hear them talking and laughing and carrying on in the living room, but she's not interested in that. She's interested in Mary particularly getting off her cushion and coming into the kitchen to help her. And that's not happening. So my guess is if Martha's like a lot of us, she's probably banging things around a little bit, making sure Mary hears her. She probably comes by the door, you know, sprinkles some water in her face, looking like she's sweating a little bit more, looking in, hoping Mary sees it, hoping Jesus sees it. She probably has some pretty audible sighs, maybe a few other choice words, you know, just to let everyone know, you know, I'm still in the kitchen. There's a lot of work to be done. Her frustration continues to grow. And finally, no one's getting a clue, her fury boils over and she snaps. It's a worst case scenario too. She marches into the living room and instead of going to Mary, she goes right to Jesus. And she knows Jesus is not just a normal person. I mean, she understands, she doesn't get the whole Messiah thing quite yet, but she knows he is really a special man of God. There's something about him that is unique and amazing. But at this point, she's not focused on the amazing. She's focused on the fact that he's not doing what he should be doing. Let me read this to you. It says, Martha was distracted by the big dinner she was preparing. She came into Jesus. It should have said she marched in. She came into Jesus. Lord, doesn't it seem unfair to you that my sister just sits here on her cushion and I do all the work? This is really, if you're hosting a party, this is probably not the way to treat your guests. Tell her to come help me now. The laughter has stopped. All the attention now is on Martha and her yelling at Jesus about her sister. Neighbors and all are watching. They're looking in. This has become a scene. But Jesus said to her, my dear Martha, you are worried and upset over all these details. Understatement of the year. He said, but there is only one thing worth being concerned about. Mary has discovered it, and it will not be taken away from her. How many of y'all have seen City Slickers? It's an old movie. There was a guy named Curly in there. Jack Palance played Curly, and every once in a while he'd go around and he'd look at the dudes from the city, and he goes, you guys. However he's talking, he goes, there's only one thing that matters. And they kept saying, Curly, what's the one thing? And he wouldn't tell them. Jesus has said this to Martha, there's one thing. I'll see if I can answer that in a minute. What's happened is Martha has allowed her anger and her fury and her resentment to grow to the point where she breaks all social decorum. She is demonstrating what her primary love language is, acts of service. This is what we normally show others what our primary is or what our go-to is by how we treat them. She's in there busting it in the kitchen because serving others and doing these things is the most important. And my guess is there are some other things going on with her too. That all that I do here, I'm doing, you know, you say, I'm doing it for you guys, even though I'm screaming at you now because you're not coming through for me. But probably too for her is the way she valued her, or her own self-image came from looking competent and being able to do things well. And she was not coming out. It wasn't going according to plan. But that's what happens to us. We can, something that could be innately good can be warped and turned into something ugly if we don't handle it properly. We don't know what Mary's love language is. You're probably saying, well, she just likes that quality time. Don't know if that's true or not. Well, we do know Mary gave her attention to her guests and in that moment decided what's most important is not getting all the doilies lined up right or all that. What's important is once they've come here, our focus of our attention needs to be on our guests. Martha could have handled this so much different. At some point, she could have easily said before Jesus and the guys get there, said, you know what, Mary, we've got a few more things left to do. How about you greeting them when they come in, and then once you jump in and help me, we'll get this knocked out so we can go back and be with the guest. She doesn't do that. See, she was assuming, and that always gets us in trouble, that Mary got it. She could have easily, when she noticed that there was still going on, Mary's in there and taking her apron off, she could have gone in and whispered to Mary, I really love it if you come help me for a few minutes and we'll get this done and we'll get back in. That doesn't happen either. What she does is she lets her frustration grow. She has these expectations because everyone should know. And when they don't, it gets worse and worse and worse and worse to where she boils over and she really embarrasses herself in front of all these guests. Our tendency is to take what we think is right, make that right for everyone else, and that's the definition of self-righteousness. I know what's right. You should, or you're getting ready to find out. And there will be hell to pay if you don't pay attention. We see this played out, and I'm really grateful we have the story. I will tell you, I identify a lot with Martha. I'm a lot more comfortable being active and doing stuff than I am. I would not be really good at Mary's role, although I've been trying to learn how to do that better. Martha just didn't, she was not at her best. So what's the one thing? Jesus said, Mary's found it, Martha. You've missed it. Mary's found it. Here's what I think the one thing is, that we give our undivided attention to Jesus, ask him for help in knowing what to do, and then do it. At any point, if Jesus was a really smart, attuned person, he could have easily seen, you know, boy, Martha's in the kitchen, she's busting, and there's some real important things that need to be done. Mary, how about if you and I go in there and we'll help her out? You know, Jesus washed the disciples' feet one time when no one else is willing to. He wasn't against doing hard work. He would step in and do whatever was needed, but that wasn't what was needed then. Martha had an agenda and a standard that had eclipsed the point. It had moved from hospitality to self-defining. So I think that one thing is just figure out what does Jesus want, ask him, listen, and follow up on it. Because this idea of showing love to people is just not a cookie-cutter deal. It's not a one-size-fits-all. Everyone's different. Even someone that, like the quality time, for some people, quality time is carving out no distraction. We can sit down, we can talk about things. And others, it's, I don't really want to talk. I just like to hang out with you. Let's go play golf. Let's go shopping or whatever you like to do. So it's that one thing. I'm going to ask Jesus what he wants. I'm going to focus my attention on him, and I'm going to look and see through his eyes what someone around me needs. Being distracted is the great killer of quality time with others. If you have people in your life where this idea of quality time is most important, you being distracted will kill it. And if you're wired kind of like me, where this whole action and service and all that, it can become a mess. Martha probably was saying, "I'm really busy showing love to you," you know, and coming in with, you know, her eyes glazed over, flour in her hair and sweating and all that kind of stuff. Well, there's, again, we just need to be careful that we don't take our own idea of love and make that the standard. No matter the situation you and I are in, if we deliberately focus on Jesus in the moment, and ask him for help. What do you want me to do here? What would be the right thing? What does this person need? He will help us see it. He'll help us see things through his eyes, and we can also ask the people around us what they want. Back to this thing about quality time. Let me spend a couple things on this. This idea of being distracted, it really kills it. And some of us, whether we know it or not, are really distracted people. I quit wearing a watch about 6 months ago, and the reason is because I'd be sitting down with someone talking to them, and I catch myself checking my watch. I had an Apple Watch; it would notify me when messages came and all that kind of stuff. And I just realized this is stupid. And even the time, if I'm sitting there talking, Robin and I are talking, and I keep looking at my watch, what's he thinking? He can't wait for this to be over. Some of us do that. Sometimes we're deliberately doing it. We're trying to get them to signal, you know, quality time is 3 minutes. Anything more than that is extraordinarily selfish. Phones. Some of us, we cannot not look at our phones. I have mine set on vibrate, and it still bothers me. You know, this distraction thing, and some people say, well, we don't have the attention span we used to. Oh, that's a sorry excuse. If you don't have much of an attention span, work on it. We make excuses for things that we don't really need to. I don't wear a watch, so I'm not being bothered by that. I still get distracted. And some of you are in meetings. Don't do this if you're in a meeting at work. And you do it on Zoom, too. You think you're being really tricky if you're in the meeting and you got your phone down here and you're... people know. They know what you're doing. And you like Zoom because then you're looking at the camera, but you're doing this. But they can tell by your facial expressions you're completely zoned out somewhere else. If it's okay to do it, fine, but you signal to people that you don't want to be there and you don't think they're that important. You don't read the paper. I mean, there's a lot of things. Just be careful with it. You may not realizing what you're doing, but what you're really is telling people they're not that important. I've got better things to do. I'm a Martha. Quit being a Mary. So we've got work to do. I'm going to give you a handful of things that have helped me, and then the homework assignment and the take-home sheet. I hope you'll get it. You can get them when you leave here. We'll help you figure out in your circle of influence, home, school, work, neighborhood, people around you, you know, how those that quality time is important, what can you begin to do to express love to them in a way that they get it? My daughter and I, we're wired very similarly. The other day, we decided in honor of my dad's birthday, we would drive to North Carolina, just across the Virginia border, to go to Ralph's Barbecue, phenomenal barbecue. Dad loved Ralph's Barbecue. Every time I go see him, did you stop by Ralph's on the way? And he loved it, so we're going to, on his birthday, we'll always go to Ralph's. Well, this was a Monday. We got down to Ralph's, drove 4 hours to get there, find out Ralph's is closed on Monday. Their webmaster hadn't put that on the website. In Weldon, North Carolina, there may not be a webmaster. I'm not sure how it came up there, but we get there, and sure enough, on the door, closed Monday. So we got pictures in front of Ralph's, but Zippo Barbecue. So we drove 8 hours to go to Bojangles. We could have done that a little quicker, but the thing is it was really quality time for me and Sissy. We just hung out, we talked, we laughed. It was a surprise kind of thing. Neither one of us got really mad or anything like that. It was a surprise opportunity to spend some time together. When our kids were growing up, parents, I don't know what it's like for you, but When I was growing up, road trips were the absolute worst. My dad and I did not like each other. We both were convinced we got ripped off, he with a son, me with a dad, and the trips were miserable. I'm sure Dad jacked up his arm, reaching back to slap my leg, because if I made any noise or if I did anything, and I'm not saying I was a great kid, but I'm saying the trips were utterly, utterly miserable. I asked both of my kids a few years back, I said, what's one of your favorite memories of family time together? And they said, driving to and from vacation. Not where we went for a vacation, but the drive. And I'm flashbacking and thinking, what's wrong with them? But I realized Becky made driving fun. We didn't do videos. We didn't have any of that. She would come up with all kinds of snacks. There'd be stories. There'd be things we would talk about. We'd catch up with each other. We had really good times in the car, completely the opposite of what I grew up with. That quality time, you can find ways to make it happen. Taking a drive with someone and listening to some music and every once in a while maybe talking about something, doing a project, having a meal together. Becky really loves talking. I have a harder time with it. And again, there's nothing wrong. It's just different the way we're wired. So I call her every day when I'm coming back from work or wherever I've been, and we just talk about it. Somehow I can talk better when we're driving or when we're taking a walk. My dad and I, and I'll close with this, my dad and I, once Dad became a Christian, I had one of my favorite memories is early in the morning at their house, 6:15, 6 o'clock, going upstairs, and Dad would be in there reading. He and I would read together. Read our Bibles together, paper together. Sometimes we'd talk, sometimes we wouldn't. But I loved having those times with him. There was a way we connected. We were very similar in some ways, but I won't get those back, but I've got great memories to hang on to. Do your homework and look at this idea of what quality time's like. Think about the people in your life and how you can how you can show it to them. Let's pray together. God, we're all guilty of wanting others to be like us. It's different trying to think, how can I love somebody else, especially some that are wired very differently and some that may be really hard for us to understand. You've shown us what love's like. You have loved us even at our absolute worst. Help us to learn from you and show your love to the people around us here in our church and our families, our work, our neighborhood. And especially help us to realize that how we do this is a reflection of you. In Christ's name, amen.